WAUK Jackson, Milwaukee's real news and great conversation. A Civic Media station.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by ZipRecruiter.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. The Justice Department has charged a man with the stabbing death of a Ukrainian refugee on a North Carolina commuter train. CBS's Matt Piper.
U.S. Attorney for North Carolina Russ Ferguson says while the incident occurred on August 22nd, the surveillance video from the train was only just recently released.
The surveillance video was obtained from the train, and that's really what gave us the basis for federal charges here.
He says the victim, Irina Zaretska, fled to Charlotte after living in a bomb shelter in Ukraine.
I'm here today to announce that we're going to supplement those state charges with federal charges. These federal charges will go alongside the murder case in state court. We hope that they will ensure justice for Irina, for her family, and for the whole Charlotte community.
Matt Piper, CBS News.
President Trump says he was not notified about the Israeli strike on Hamas leaders in Qatar ahead of time and will give a full statement tomorrow on it. CBS's Aaron Navarro.
We learned that President Trump, in addition to calling Netanyahu, also talked to the emir and prime minister of Qatar after the attack. And from Caroline Levitt, she said that Trump assured them an attack on their soil would not happen again.
The UN Security Council, according to diplomatic sources, will hold an emergency meeting tomorrow. Hamas says five of its members were killed, and Israel's prime minister defends the strike, saying he believes it may finally pave the way toward lasting peace. President Trump has told the European Union to impose tariffs on China and India of up to 100% as part of an effort to put pressure on Russia to end its war with Ukraine. It was first reported by the Financial Times. In Long Beach, California, a lot of shipping containers are where they should not be. CBS's Adam Yamaguchi.
The Coast Guard says more than 60 shipping containers fell off a cargo ship, leaving a mess of boxes in the water here in Long Beach. Fireboat using water cannons to use the force of water to keep those boxes from drifting off into areas of the port where there still is traffic.
The vessel arrived at Long Beach from southern China. The incident is under investigation. A new study looks at obesity in children. CBS's Michael Wallace.
A new UNICEF report says 1 in 10 school-aged children are obese. The agency's Harriet Torlis says governments have to stop the spread of the ultra-processed foods causing that malnutrition.
Prohibiting marketing of these unhealthy foods and beverages to children.
She says if they don't, obesity will become an even bigger economic burden when today's children become adults.
By the year 2035, a staggering $4 trillion U.S. dollars will be incurred by overweight and obesity.
Michael Wallace, CBS News.
A Michigan judge tosses a case against 15 accused fake electors for President Trump in 2020. Charges were brought by the state's Democratic Attorney General over 2 years ago. This is CBS News.
Are you looking to hire? ZipRecruiter finds the best candidate for your job fast. Try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/free. ZipRecruiter.com/free.
As Wisconsin is saying the word bag instead of bag, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Brewer baseball tonight. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Game two of the Brewers and Rangers tonight in Texas. Milwaukee losing last night 5-0, but one bright spot was the return of Christian Yelich to the lineup. Yelly had missed the past five games with a bad back. Pat Murphy after the game.
Yeah, he's on it. It was a great day for him. Came up kind of empty, got him one hit, but he hit two other balls that, you know, they're homers in some parks.
NFL, the Packers host the Commanders on Thursday Night Football. I asked Micah Parsons how he was holding up after just a week to get ready for the Lions game.
Physically, obviously draining. That was like my first game of just constant snaps, repetition, things like that. So obviously I got to, you know, recover, do everything I need to do to get ready for Thursday. But emotionally, I couldn't be more happy, you know, to get my first win in Lambeau, having amazing fans. You know, I told J-Lo that's our first one, and I can't wait to keep stacking them.
That's Packers defensive end Micah Parsons with Sports on. I'm Mike Clemens.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. If you're looking for a documentary that will make your life look pretty boring, check out AKA Charlie Sheen, a new doc that drops on Netflix this week. The Inside Look is a two-parter that explores his three marriages, movie career where his credits include Platoon, Wall Street, and Ferris Bueller's Day Off, and the hit sitcom 2.5 Men. The 60-year-old Sheen also talks about his various addictions, mental health breakdown in 2011, where he claims to have had tiger blood, and is firing from 2.5 Men for drug use. And Sheen is well aware that anytime you self-promote with a new new movie or book, you do need spicy new material. So the actor is now saying he has also had sex with lots of men, and it all started when he was smoking crack. I tip my hat to the producers who somehow managed to cram all that into just two parts. AKA Charlie Sheen drops September 10th on Netflix. For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Peach Wabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
As Wisconsin is cheering on the Brew Crew. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Our stretch of warmer temperatures will continue through the rest of the week. Mostly cloudy tonight, a few showers and thunderstorms. A low in the mid-50s. For tomorrow, sunshine returns, a high in the mid-70s. Highs to the upper 70s Thursday. It's 69 degrees right now.
Todd Albaugh.
Wisconsin has a new candidate for governor. Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley. He'll join the program at 3:35, and we'll kick around politics with Pat Kreitlow and Trigvi Olsen. Join us.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4.
Real news, great conversation from Milwaukee and beyond. 540 WAUK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
It's a good day to be indigenous.
Get up, stand up.
They are going to become more brutal.
Courtney Cup hit me cut again.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade. Hey, Kutagi, to all my friends and relatives in four directions. You are listening to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot. Hey, we discuss local, national, Native news and events. And as you know, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues. Hey, we got a special show today, and State Representative, I always like to say we have a special show every day, but we really do this day, and I'm going to have State Representative Heather Keeler invite her guest here today for a couple segments, and then later on we'll have Arvina Martin on from Emerge Wisconsin and getting our updates from what's happening politically in Wisconsin. And then before I hand over the show to State Representative Heather Keeler, I want to remind everyone on Saturday, September 13th, our walk team, Team AM 950, will join hundreds of other teams supporting Minnesota Recovery Connection Walk for Recovery on the grounds of the Minnesota State Capitol. The Walk for Recovery is a powerful expression of the positive impact that people in recovery can take. Help us break the stigma of addiction by joining Team AM 950 at the walk or by making a donation. And I can tell you guys later about that. But before I get too caught up in my own world here, I want to invite State Representative Heather Keeler here and take it away, State Representative. Almost said it. Oh.
Oh, I was going to say, you did so many times without calling me that other name. And so you're getting so good at it. that's cool. I love that event. When I did my recording for you last week, I talked about, you know, this month being the month that we really bring awareness and celebrate. And so that's great. I hope people engage in the ways that you definitely provide. We have some events in our community too, and I think all over. And I think one of the cool things about these events is we're destigmatizing recovery a little bit, and just really bringing community in that healing process. And I think we're seeing a lot of positivity around that. So that's great, Robert. I'm glad you're going to share that with us.
Absolutely.
All right. So, you know, I'm on this show quite a bit, and I feel like a lot of times I just talk myself, and I want to like bring other people along and use the platform, right? And educate people on some things. And so when I was elected in the pandemic in 2020. We came in with a small class into the House of Representatives. We like to call ourselves the Corona class. We are unique. You know, we'll say that, but I think we are unique because we ran campaigns, you know, through the phone, through the screens. We called people checking on each other. And I came in with some really stellar classmates. Professionally, we're deep. Politically, we have real great understandings in different areas. And so I want to highlight one of my classmates and chat with Representative Cedric Frazier. Welcome.
Hey, happy to be here. You know, you say small class, but a mighty class.
Probably yes.
Some of the biggest voices in the caucus right now. So happy to be here too today.
Yeah. So I guess one thing I wanted to chat about, and Robert, I'm not sure if you went, but it was last Friday. They did the flag raising for the tribes. I wasn't able to come because I was back in Moorhead, but you, both of you guys were there, right? How was that?
I was in New York and a little butthurt because I didn't get the Ho-Chunk flag up, but that's a different show, Heather.
Oh, that is a different show. So Seth, you were there though, right?
I was there and I spent probably like half an hour looking for you. So I didn't, but no, it was amazing. You know, listening to, getting to speak, listen to all the chairmen talk about the importance of being recognized, the importance of getting closer to the recognition of them, their tribes and their sovereignty. You know, I think it's probably one of the biggest events that I've been a part of since I've been a legislator, and just the impact and what it means to, I don't even want to say the state of Minnesota, what it means to this land to acknowledge the history and the folks that were here before anybody else was here. And that they're still here and thriving, and the things that we need to do to maintain those partnerships and ensure that this state is being inclusive of them. I get a loss for words because it was that good of an event. It was that touching to be a part of it and to know. I know you've been a part of this to get to this point, but to know what it took to get to the point to have those flags go up, to listen to the stories from the chairman to talk about their history, their childhood, their grandparents, their ancestors, and what they've been through, what they went through here, and what it meant to them. I mean, it was a touching day, and the weather held good, and it was a good time overall, and a great day for the state. That's what I want to say. The biggest thing, a great day for the state to really honor and recognize the true history of this country and of this state.
Yeah, I think it's cool. I mean, I was just down there today and they're up every day. You know, the thing is it wasn't just like a one day thing.
That's right.
It's a thing implemented. It's there now. It's the representation. You know, and the hope is that it's the reminder that we have to move our feet in action with this. You know, we can do land acknowledgements a lot. We can hang flags places, but it's also like we have to do the work to, you know, move in those steps. And so just a kind of a reflection of the work you've done in the House. And then when we come back on the segment, we'll kind of look at maybe some what future is looking like for you. But as you reflect on your time that we've, you know, spent in the House, we've gone through a lot. You know, we came in a pandemic, had the trifecta, we've gone through when you work you've been able to do a partner, you know, with
I don't know if you caught that, but she was asking some of the coolest things that you did and are looking forward to, Cedric. You're breaking up just a little bit, Heather.
Yeah, I think some of the coolest things. Well, some of the coolest things are probably. I think one time I'll say this. It's not even a legislative thing, but Rep. Keeler, you brought your students. You brought some students up from your district. From your high school, I think your son was there that day too. And we spent some time talking with them and talking about the legislative process. I think you had multiple of us come in that day, but I think I was there for probably the entire time we were in this portion, having a conversation about their dreams, their goals, why it's important to see folks that look like them, move like them, talk like them, have lived experience like them in places where we make policy. And kind of what it paralyzes and how it impacts folks in the state overall. And that probably, I always think when I have time to connect with young people and hear about their hopes and dreams and then tell them that, you know, this place is for you. You can be here and you can make an impact. And for that, I think that's always some of the most powerful times and some of the most impactful times for me, because I remember when I was a young person and seeing someone that represented someone like me in a space that was so important and so impactful. It always sent me, I always went back more hopeful and inspired that I could be in that place that someday. So those are kind of some, that day always pops in my mind. I got like there's like a picture from that day that pops up on my timeline every now and then. I actually think on one of my socials, I have a picture of me talking to the kids as my main profile picture. That's how much that day meant to me. Yeah.
In our cool sneakers.
Yes.
I do remember. Yeah, that was really, really meaningful. That's kind of a cool memory, Sid. Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah. You made it happen.
So, yeah, but again, it's representation, right? And so that's the thing that, you know, we've all been able to do. So what's some of the big moves you've made policy-wise, political-wise in this work as your time? Like, what's one of your biggest wins and one of the proud points you've had in this work?
You know, in this moment right now, as you know, we're having this conversation about with the tragedy that happened at Annunciation. And then within a 24-hour period, we had this gun violence that was happening. I think some of the biggest things I've done has been around that area of crime intervention and then restorative justice. But specifically, I carried a bill for red flag laws to keep guns out of the hands of folks that are dangerous or commit harm to themselves or harm to the community. And that was such an impactful thing. And then, as you know, I carried the bill for restoring the right to vote, because all these things get people back into the community. And it also has an impact on public safety.
Hey, Heather, we're going to take a break. We're here with State Representative Heather Keeler and our friend, Representative Cedric Frazier, and this is Native Roots Radio, and we'll be right back after this short break.
On view at Minneapolis Institute of Art, artist Mary Sully was a visionary ahead of her time. Born on Standing Rock Reservation, she worked in near obscurity between the 1920s and 1940s, creating intricate, vividly colored drawings that blend Dakota heritage with modern life. Now on display at the Minneapolis Institute of Art, experience the first solo exhibition featuring Mary Sully's work, only at MIA until September 21st, and always free to visit. Learn more at artsmia.org.
Four Sisters Farmers Market is more than a place to shop for delicious organic food. It's a celebration of indigenous culture, food sovereignty, and community. Now in its 11th season, the market offers healthy, affordable, culturally appropriate local foods every Thursday from 11 to 3. Located on the American Indian Cultural Corridor off Franklin Avenue, Four Sisters Farmers Market is a project of NACD. Every Thursday now through October, discover more about Four Sisters Farmers Market by visiting NACD.org.
The city of Minneapolis is now on Native Roots Radio with Minneapolis AIR. AIR stands for American Indian Relations. Guest host Christine McDonald talks to people about important things affecting the city's Native communities. Minneapolis AIR dives into topics like public safety, public health, elections, and so much more. Tune in to Minneapolis AIR on Native Roots Radio from 5 to 6 p.m. on the second Wednesday of every month, right here on AM 950.
Greg Bakken here. Like you, I love good, fresh, delicious food. So I want to tell you about this treasure in Roseville called Maverick's Real Roast Beef. Maverick's has the best roast beef sandwiches I've ever had, made fresh every order. Add fries or onion rings dropped in the fryer when ordered, and you have a winning combination. Maverick's Real Roast Beef has a lot more than roast beef, so check out their website, mavericksbeef.com, or check out their restaurant on Lexington in Roseville.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot. Hey, welcome back, everyone. Again, we're going to hand the show over to State Representative Heather Keeler. Welcome back to Native Roots Radio.
Thanks. If I start to break in and out, Robert, jump in and help. You kind of know where we're trying to go with this. Mm-hmm. So, said, you know, we came in together into the house. It's important to, you know, do this work together. But sometimes when we do this work, we find other paths. And so talk to us a little bit about what your next steps are looking like and what opportunities you have to share with us.
Well, most recently, a few weeks ago, I announced that I'm going to be running for, I live in Hennepin County. I represent the city of New Hope and Crystal, currently District 43A. But most recently, I announced that I'm going to be running for Hennepin County Attorney. So that would be the lead lawyer for the office that, oversees prosecution, on the prosecution sides of crimes and also oversees the civil side of the lawyers that represent and advise the agencies within Hennepin County. And so very important office, very important role. I thought this was a time to step out and step in and step up to lead in that role. And I'm looking forward. So far, campaign is going well. I'm getting a chance to talk to lots of people, reconnecting with people that I've known, relationships that I have, but also meeting new people. So I'm very excited about it. And one of my main things is that I'm just looking forward to building more relationships. You know, particularly when I think about the Native community, it's important that we have those relationships because oftentimes resolving crimes, prosecuting cases, holding people accountable, it comes down to making sure you have relationships so that you can get people in to report crimes, but also people in to give the information you need to hold individuals accountable when they're causing harm to the community. And I know how important relationships are. So I'm looking forward to continuing relationships that I have. And Heather, I know you know that we have some friends that are close here that I'm going to be connecting with to deepen those relationships in the Native community in Hennepin County. And I'm looking forward to talk with everybody and just finding out what they want to see in the next leader of Hennepin County. But no doubt, I believe I'm going to be that next leader for Hennepin County Attorney's Office.
That since we like coming out of class for sure. Although, you know, the impact that Hennepin County has a ripple effect on the rest of the state. You know, you're the example. You lead on how we navigate things like ICWA implementation, you know, different things that are specific with our communities. But, you know, one thing I've talked about on this show a lot is the attendance work that we've been talking about. And you and I have sat at the education table together. We've been partnering a lot with the Hennepin County Attorney's Office now around attendance and, you know, preventing truancy because that ends up going through the court systems. Tell us a little bit. We've had a lot of history on the education table, but where do you see, you know, your role in attendance when it comes to, you know, your new role?
Yeah. So I've met with the folks in their VA school office there in Hennepin County, and they've got some really good ideas and initiatives that they're working on to ensure that our students are attending school. One, building and developing and deepening relationships with our school districts, superintendents, principals in those school districts, any advocacy organizations that are working to make sure our kids have great outcomes. And one of it, like I said, building those relationships so that you can get the data. The data is important. Having access to the data, but also having access to those administrators and those teachers that have relationships with the families and the students, and really working in tandem through those coalitions and collaborations to ensure that we can identify when there's issues where our kids may not be coming to school, find out what those issues are. Then again, like I said, the county, it's a big county. So the Hennepin County Attorney's Office is just one cog in that, but you have access to all of these resources and services that can help. We can direct our families to, we can direct our students to ensure they're getting what they need to make sure they're attending school on a consistent basis to have better outcomes. And as you know, like I know, the reason this is important is that we can know when we look at the data, the more frequently students are out of the classroom, the less likely they're going to have the outcomes they need to have a better life when it comes to their education. And so we're trying to find ways that we can identify where the issues are, intervene, provide resources, and ensure that our kids are getting the best services that they need to provide for the best possible educational outcomes, which again, to me, all of this goes back to better communities, better resources, better outcomes, better public safety for everybody.
Yeah, I love that because with attendance and truancy, we've always talked about, it shouldn't be responsive. Like we should just lean into the prevention work. That's and, right. And, you know, really making a place that people feel like they want to go and engage and love to learn again, but there's a lot of, you know, parameters around that. I love the Be at School team. Shout out to Ashley. You know, she's come to the table with actually good solutions. You know, this is one thing I say to everybody in every organization in every space. You can complain about an issue all you want, but providing solution focused conversations is where it's at. Like come to the table with some honest solutions, and that team, the Be at School team, did a fantastic job. And so, I endorse everything they're doing and think it's actually like really, really great and hope that all stays intact and we'll do great work there together for sure.
Well, I think the program is great, and I know it's been there for a while. And my one of my goals is to being a new leader would be to get it more resources that it needs so we can help even more students. I mean, that to me is help as many students as possible. Like you said, it's about being proactive, not reactive.
Right. So what does a county attorney and their office do? Right. Like sometimes I think that people don't engage in elections because they're not totally sure what all of these seats do and how it impacts their life. So do you just like tell us what does that position do?
Well, the main role of the elected county attorney is to oversee the office. You got the criminal division side that prosecutes cases. So and that's the one everyone knows about. We talk about that's important because it's a big part of our public safety system. Like I said, if someone's doing harm in the community, you want to address that, hold them accountable. That's a big part of what the office does. That's where most of the attorneys are in that office because we have a large county, over a million people in this county. So it's a lot going on. But then you have the civil side that has about 30 attorneys, and they're focused on advising the different agencies. So we're talking about human services. We're talking about the safety net programs. We're talking about those programs that are intervention programs and making sure that those programs are doing things according to law, avoiding any type of legal liabilities, and also maintaining and ensuring that the grant programs that we have are being done the right way till we get those resources out to the community. As a leader, my goal would be to make sure all those things are functioning well, and also making sure all the political stuff that happens out there, that the 500 staff in the office, they don't have to worry about that. They have to focus, they get to focus on their job, create a great work environment and a good culture. You know, I want it to be a happy place for people to work in. We deal with some heavy things, but at least when you come there, you have a good work culture. It's a happy place for people to work in. You can be proud that you work in that office. And when people are happy when they work somewhere, they work harder. They have better outcomes. They engage. They communicate with people better. That's the kind of environment that I'm looking to create and give folks what they need. But overall, those are the big two divisions of that office, but they're working in tandem with all of the areas within the county to make sure that Hennepin County thrives that everybody in Hennepin County has what they need to be successful.
So how does it work then? You know, because there's a lot of Native people, it's an urban Indian community, right?
Yeah.
And so a lot of this, you know, work that we do, there is this understanding that we do, you know, state and tribal relations. What's your viewpoint on then like the county and tribes relations, just because of the shared interest of the community?
I think there should be deep relationships there and deep partnerships and collaboration. You know, again, this is what I talk about. I think the thing I bring that's probably unique than anyone else that's ever ran for this office is my background and my relationships and the work that I've already done with different communities, right? And so for me, it's about deepening those. If those partnerships and collaborations don't exist, I want them to exist. And that's what I'm gonna be working for. Like I said, my role is gonna be that, I'm gonna be that cheerleader for Hennepin County Attorney's Office saying, hey, everybody, you're all welcome here. We wanna work with everyone. We wanna make sure we're being proactive to get people engaged so that we can create better outcomes for everybody.
Robert, are you trying to ask a question? Is there a question brewing in your brain over there that you want to ask, Seth?
No, but we got less than a minute with this segment, and then we have Arvina Martin coming on next.
Yep.
So speak your truth here in this last minute, you two.
Yeah, but, you know, you've shared kind of where you've been and where you kind of want to go. So, you know, how can people engage with you? How can people, you know, join you in this process? Where can they find you? You know, it's always about two raising money. Give us all the deets.
Yeah, look me up on all my socials, just at Cedric Frazier. You'll find me, cedricfrazier.org. You can find my website. It'll tell everything about the campaign, what's going on, how people can get engaged. As always, you can, if you feel kind to donate to support the campaign. But we really just want to meet with people and engage with folks. If there are particular issues you want to talk about and know what my vision is or what my thoughts are on them, I'm calling people back. I'm coming to the community. Invite me to the community. Invite me. I'll bring a bunch of people. Let's sit down and have a conversation. That's how you build relationships.
You're listening to 540 WAUK, Milwaukee's home for mornings with Pat Kreitlow. CBS News brief. After a deadly strike by Israel on a compound in Qatar that has left five Hamas members dead, President Trump responds.
I will say this. We want the hostages back, but we are not thrilled about the way that went down today.
The president says he will give a full statement tomorrow. In addition to a state murder charge, a man accused of stabbing to death a Ukrainian refugee on a Charlotte, North Carolina commuter train is now facing a federal charge. U.S. Attorney Russ Ferguson.
I hope that one day everyone feels safe riding light rail. Right now, I think we need to see changes before people are going to feel safe on light rail.
At the port of Long Beach in California, the Coast Guard says more than 60 shipping containers have fallen off of a cargo ship. CBS's Adam Yamaguchi reports.
The vessel carrying the containers arrived at the port from southern China. It's not yet known what's inside those containers or how they fell off the ship. Now, no injuries have been reported, and authorities are continuing to investigate the cause of this incident.
CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
As Wisconsin is hitting the road on your Harley, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Brewer baseball tonight. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Game two of the Brewers and Rangers tonight in Texas. Milwaukee losing last night 5-0, but one bright spot was the return of Christian Yelich to the lineup. Yelich had missed the past five games with a bad back. Pat Murphy after the game.
Yeah, he's on it. It was a great day for him. Came up kind of empty, got one hit, but he hit two other balls that, you know, they're homers in some parks.
NFL, the Packers host the Commanders on Thursday Night Football. I asked Micah Parsons how he was holding up after just a week to get ready for the Lions game.
Physically, obviously draining. That was like my first game of just constant snaps, repetition, things like that. So obviously I got to, you know, recover, do everything I need to do to get ready for Thursday. But emotionally, I couldn't be more happy, you know, to get my first win in Lambeau, having amazing fans. You know, I told J-Lo that's our first one, and I can't wait to keep stacking them.
That's Packers defensive end Micah Parsons with Sports on. I'm Mike Clemens.
As Wisconsin is cheering on Bucky Badger, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabe. Fans of The Office should probably know by now there is a spinoff of the show called The Paper. The show dropped last week and is shot in the same mockumentary style as The Office was. The pilot of the show lacked some of that natural quirkiness that The Office had. There were a few laughs, but I don't see the show going that far without a Steve Carell or Rainn Wilson. If you're interested to see for yourself, check out The Paper on Peacock. The highly awaited Task has dropped on HBO. Series creator and showrunner Brad Inglesby is also the creative force behind the critically acclaimed Mayor from Easttown. Heading up the cast is Mark Ruffalo, who is joined by Tom Pelfrey, Amelia Jones, and nightlight pal Jamie McShane. The show follows a task force led by Ruffalo that is trying to stop a series of home robberies. I watched the pilot, which aired last weekend, and really dug it. Unfortunately, we only get one episode a week from HBO. New episodes drop at 9 p.m. Sunday nights. Definitely worth a look, and if you haven't seen it yet, check out Mayor from Easttown with Kate Winslet. For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Peach Waba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Our stretch of warmer temperatures will continue through the rest of the week. Mostly cloudy tonight, a few showers and thunderstorms. A low in the mid-50s. For tomorrow, sunshine returns, a high in the mid-70s. Highs to the upper 70s Thursday. It's 69 degrees right now.
Matt Nair on air.
Mr. Darren Von Ruden, who is the president of the Wisconsin Farmers Union. This farm bill is supposed to be passed in 2023.
It's really frustrating that they've forgotten about small farmers. We actually pay more taxes than the billionaires do. Why are those tax dollars not coming back to the communities that pay them? Whether it's through the farm bill or it's other programs, we need to make sure that we keep fighting and let them know that we're not happy.
Matt Nair on air, weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel.
Louisiana versus Calais, C-A-L-L-A-I-S, could deal a death blow to the impact, the power, the capacity of the Supreme Court to decide Voting Rights Act cases. This is one of those times when the Supreme Court needs to hear from the public about the appropriate resolution of this major case that could compromise the Voting Rights Act going forward beyond Louisiana.
Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel. Saturday mornings from 9 to 11. Pat Kreitlow.
On Wednesday, helping taxpayers understand just how much the private school voucher scheme is taking out of our wallets and our hometown schools.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan, and I want to be your next United States Senator, and you are listening to Native Roots Radio.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot. Hey, welcome back, everyone. This is Robert Pilot, and we are here with our friend Arvina Martin, Executive Director of Emerge Wisconsin. And I just want to read this real quick. Arvina Martin is the first Native person ever elected to Madison, Wisconsin's Common Council, and was elected Vice President in 2020 by her peers. Arvina is an enrolled member of Ho-Chunk Nation, is Stockbridge, Muncie, we don't like to talk about that, and has worked with Native communities throughout her whole career. Welcome, Arvina. Great to see you, as always. Oh, you're muted.
I did it again. It's been so long since I've done that. So sorry. It's great to be here.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's good to see you as always. A lot going on. You know, I would like maybe you just to take over this first part of the show and talk about what you want to talk about. And maybe I'll jump in and ask you a few questions. But I know there's things happening nationally. We've talked about this and what's happening, bubbling up in Illinois, in Chicago, and all these things, but also what's happening in Wisconsin besides the great victory by the Green Bay Packers.
Oh, wow. It was a good game. I had the, you know, my father passed away in 2019, and after we got the Micah Parsons coming to Green Bay News, and then after we won on Sunday, both of those times, like, I got to make sure Dad saw that, and it was kind of nice to think about my dad with some big Packer wins.
That's cool. That's very cool. Yeah. And I have to mention, too, that our Vikings won, and it looked really good for one quarter, but I guess they only needed one quarter to score 21 points and beat the beloved Bears. Ho-wah.
That's, as a Packer fan, that's one of those games where, you know they can't both lose, so you kind of hope for a small, very localized earthquake to swallow up just the players. Just kidding.
Yeah. Or a tie.
I do not advocate for violence against Vikings or Bears.
Or a tie, right? A tie would work just as well, especially if the Packers won.
Ties do have implications in the NFL. So, you know, that's something.
Definitely.
So I actually think that it looks like it's going to be another good NFC North year. So I'm just glad we got that monkey off our back by winning a game against one of our division rivals that is not the Bears.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I know a couple of years ago when your new quarterback started, you were really up on him, and I wasn't convinced, but he's the real deal, isn't he?
Yeah, I think he's still growing, too, which is pretty exciting. You know, I was thinking about this. I'm trying to remember what year that we got Brett Favre when he started. I mean, that was in the 90s, so that was 30 years ago. And, you know, growing up a Packer fan in the 80s when we always lost, and we, you know, our big quarterback was Don Majkowski, you know, who lots of people don't remember. We had the big bust of Tony Mandarich, and, you know, I'm feeling pretty good in Love's hands. So, like, we've had this consistent since about 30 years ago, consistent quarterback, you know, kind of gunslinger guy running the offense. And so, you know, I think he's right in line. You know, it's
that's crazy you say that, Arvina, because I think the Vikings go through five quarterbacks a year until these last 2 years. I mean, for 30 years, I mean, the people that they brought in here, you know, Jeff George, all, you know, people that careers were on the wane.
Warren Moon.
Yes, right.
That's Brett Favre.
That's right. Well, Brett made me a believer. I only wanted him to win two games that year he came, and it was against the Packers, and he did that and more. He could have went 16 games then, 0-14,
no.
Or 2-14, and I would have been happy. But he's really become a disappointment as a person too, though, recently.
Oh,
but he's
yeah.
a great computer, great quarterback.
Yeah, no, I mean, an amazing football player, but seems to be an all-around crappy individual.
Yeah. Well,
takes
what,
taxpayer money for kids. And
yeah, and pretends and wants to blame it on concussions and things like that. And then, you know, I don't know what happened. Aaron Rodgers went off the deep end. I didn't, or either that or I just didn't notice until COVID hit when he was anti-vaxxing and telling us how smart he was. And I don't know. Did you guys?
Do you remember that weird press conference where he was like, if they were saying, oh, you have COVID toes. So he took off his shoe and like lifted above the table.
Ooh.
Ew. Gross.
Wow. No, I don't remember that. And but so did you guys know that he was that way during his career, or did it just come up like during that time?
I think he was pretty like restrained in what he shared with the public previously. And maybe it was just the matter of COVID and us all being confined to our homes and things like that. Maybe he just, maybe something inside him broke a little bit and, you know, he needed to interact more. Maybe these ideas were always there and he just never vocalized them. Maybe he, you know, just developed all these new ideas when he was isolated. I don't know.
There's two things I want to bring up and then I want to move on. Well, what was that famous actor that was at Standing Rock?
Shailene Woodley.
Yeah. And I couldn't believe that those two were going out because he was such right wing. And here she was. I have pictures of her at Standing Rock with Wendy, you know, and she was the real deal.
I really like the Facebook meme of like all the little old Indian ladies trying to like hook Shailene up with their grandsons.
Yeah, here's the other thing I was going to bring up. There was some weirdness with his brother on some dating show that they hadn't talked for years or whatever, and that was pre-COVID, I think.
Maybe that should have been our first hint, the fact that he didn't talk to his family for very long. Yeah, I think his brother was like The Bachelor or something.
Right.
One of these shows. I watch a lot of reality TV, but The Bachelor is not one of them. So I didn't follow that one.
Well, let's hope Mr. Love is a new breed of quarterbacks, like bringing back Bart Starr kind of way, and good for the community and things like that. Because one thing I do have to give, I've been to a Packer game now. Last year, I did go and had a great time, and the fans are great. But it reminds me way before your time, Arvina, when the Vikings were outside at the old Met. And those were the crazy days where we invented tailgating. It was unbelievable. And now they can't even, you know, you have to tailgate miles away from the stadium now here in Minnesota.
I mean, yeah. It's right there in downtown. There's not a lot of places to park and grill. And Lambeau is right in like a residential neighborhood. So people park on the streets and rent these houses for amazing amounts of money just so they can tailgate on a Packer Sunday, you know?
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to say that, Jordan Love, donated like $25 million to some charities in Green Bay that deal with homelessness. You know, he's or something like that. He donated a lot of money to homeless youth shelters. I'm frantically trying to find what it was, but I can't at the moment. But and he just got married, so you know him and his wife are making, you know, their charitable giving known in the Green Bay area. They're doing a lot of good for a lot of people, and I'm sure the community is really just so happy to have the generosity from your quarterback. It's pretty cool.
Do you know if his wife to be is a local Wisconsinite? Do you know that? Or
I don't think she is. I don't know where she's from. I can't even remember where Jordan Love went to college off the top of my head. So I don't know about her. I'm not even sure of her name.
Oh, that's cool. Next week, when we get to victory number two, we can get the Packer report and have you on three segments because, again, we're on Civic Media, too, and so a lot of people will be hearing this in Wisconsin and happy to hear you, Arvina.
I mean, a Packer fan born and raised, when I turned 18 and I, you know, got my trust money, the first thing I did was buy a share of Packer stock. So
I think I heard that. And you have a plaque that says that you are a part owner of the team. Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah.
And you know, I get invited every year to the shareholder meetings that happen at Lambeau. I've never been, but it's still cool to look. Yeah. You know, everybody's like, well, what's the return? Like, you don't get anything other than the pride of being able to say that you are a shareholder of an NFL team.
Well, and that's the one good positive thing about professional sports, I believe, is that does bring community together. I mean, we've had a couple World Series victories here. We have the Lynx that are winning again, but they had a great five-year period where they won a lot of championships with Maya Moore and the crew. And Vikings won the last NFL title, which was 1969, but they got beat by the Chiefs in the Super Bowl. And then the leagues merged, and there was never an NFL title again. So that's how that's a trivia question you can use on your friends. But, yeah. Yeah, you know, it brings community together and people walk, you know, the old around the water cooler talking about things and building community around these teams.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, the Packers are very much in that mold. And like, I would argue like a prototype of, you know, the support, the mutual support between a team, a sports team, and the city where they play. You know, it's a different kind of relationship, obviously, because there is not just one big rich guy that owns the team and can move away on a whim. You know, the Packers stay there, and the city of Green Bay, you know, I doubt that people would know anything about Green Bay if it was, you know, and no shade to Green Bay. It's lovely there. But you know, people wouldn't be as familiar, obviously wouldn't be as familiar with the city, if it weren't for the Packers, you know? And that support goes back and forth.
Hey, Native Roots Radio with Arvina Martin. We'll be right back.
The city of Minneapolis is now on Native Roots Radio with Minneapolis AIR. AIR stands for American Indian Relations. Guest host Christine McDonald talks to people about important things affecting the city's Native communities. Minneapolis AIR dives into topics like public safety, public health, elections, and so much more. Tune in to Minneapolis AIR on Native Roots Radio from 5 to 6 p.m. on the second Wednesday of every month, right here on AM 950.
On view at Minneapolis Institute of Art, artist Mary Sully was a visionary ahead of her time. Born on Standing Rock Reservation, she worked in near obscurity between the 1920s and 1940s, creating intricate, vividly colored drawings that blend Dakota heritage with modern life. Now on display at the Minneapolis Institute of Art, experience the first solo exhibition featuring Mary Sully's work, only at MIA until September 21st, and always free to visit. Learn more at artsmia.org.
Four Sisters Farmers Market is more than a place to shop for delicious organic food. It's a celebration of indigenous culture, food sovereignty, and community. Now in its 11th season, the market offers healthy, affordable, culturally appropriate local foods every Thursday from 11 to 3. Located on the American Indian Cultural Corridor off Franklin Avenue, Four Sisters Farmers Market is a project of NAGD. Every Thursday now through October, discover more about Four Sisters Farmers Market by visiting NAGD.org.
The place for live music is the Park Tavern. Park Tavern has delicious food and great bowling, and now the Park Tavern's dog-friendly patio is open and waiting for you. And make sure you catch the live music on the patio. On Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday nights from 5:30 to 8 p.m., live music awaits you with the Park Tavern's full menu available.
Reservations for groups of 8 or more are recommended. And the Park Tavern offers private and semi-private spaces for small and large groups with no room fees and no minimum spending requirements. On Louisiana Avenue, north of Highway 7 in St. Louis Park, live music and outdoor fun are back at the Park Tavern.
Hi, I'm Jane Fonda, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot. Hey, welcome back, everyone. We are here with Arvina Martin, Emerge Wisconsin's executive director, and we're talking a little football. And our studio sent me a text that it was Utah that the quarterback love is from.
Oh, okay. Huh.
Yeah, that's what I said.
That would have been my guess. I don't know why. I guess I was thinking like Michigan or something, or like Ohio. Huh.
Yeah, I think Michigan's our quarterback, our 22-year-old, unbelievably young quarterback. And Love was sitting on the bench for a couple of years before he took over, so he had some time to learn too, if I remember right.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't know that we've heard kind of how that process went. I mean, we've heard now more in retrospect that the onboarding process for Aaron Rodgers was not the smoothest, and maybe he didn't have the warmest relationship with the guy who was supposed to be his mentor. I don't know if he, you know, did the same thing and kind of cold shouldered Love, but, you know, I mean, even just being in the room, though, and being able to see, you know, how somebody at that level operates has got to be just tremendous for your own development in the game.
Wow. That's a great segue to talk about Emerge Wisconsin. Let's talk a little bit about Emerge. And I know things are happening really quickly here. And we talked a little bit about last week how you're getting really rolling on the Emerge stuff here. Talk a little bit about that. And again, I don't mind you repeating yourself because we have new listeners all the time.
Okay. Well, I am the executive director of Emerge Wisconsin. We are an organization that recruits, identifies, and trains Democratic women and non-binary folks that feel comfortable in female-centered spaces on how to run a successful campaign for political office. We have over 350 alums here in Wisconsin. We've got over 50 alumnus serving at all levels of government. And we are getting ready for our next class, our class of 2026. We've just opened our applications for our class of 2026. So you can go to our website, wi.emergeamerica.org. And there's like one of those little buttons at the top that says training. And you can look there and get to our application there. Or I can try and put it in the chat here for those folks who are online. Oh, I can't do that. Never mind.
You can send it to me in my comments and then I can put it up too. If
okay.
Like.
So this first one that I just sent it to you, Robert, is the for our application. So our training program is 70 hours over about 4 months. And we go over everything that you'll need to know, all of the tools that you'll need to put in your toolbox to run a really great campaign and win. You know, in 2024 and 2025, our alumna had a win rate of over 90%. So we did great. You know, it just says something about the caliber of people that we train, the amount of work that they put in, and the kind of training that we can offer. And I also want to mention, we are having this Saturday at 1 p.m., we are having a virtual training that is 1 hour. We call it Step Forward. And this is going to be a chance for you if you participate to learn about the things that you need to think about when you are deciding to run for office. So figuring out what your why is, why do you want to run for office? What do you want to accomplish? How to, tell a story that comes from your values, that talks about issues and about policy and solutions that can change the situation. We talk about activating your network and how to figure out, who could volunteer for what roles and how to work with your friends and family, and like about how to prepare your family for the realities of a run for office. Being a candidate is a full-time job, and sometimes you have a full-time job already, and sometimes you're also a parent. This is a really great way to learn those things that you're going to need to think about when you make the decision to run for office.
This is really huge, and I'm wondering, too, because now I'm at that age, Arvina, where I could take free classes at the university because I'm a senior citizen. Can anyone sit in, or is this specifically to do a class or to sit in on speech making or something like that?
So you have to be a part of our class, our current class, to get the trainings, and you have to apply to be in the class. But the training that we're going to be doing on Saturday is open to anybody, regardless of gender expression. If you're from Minnesota and you want to join it, this is Wisconsin, but I will help get you information, and follow up, and we can follow up with some of our national resources that we may have available for you to, if you live in Minnesota and want to run for office. It doesn't matter that there's no Emerge Minnesota. We can help train you at the national level too. And wow. We really need to get more Native people elected into all levels of office outside of tribal government. So in addition to tribal government, we need Native people serving on city councils and school boards and county boards and state legislatures and Congress and attorneys general. We need all of it, because we as Native people deal with the federal government on a different level than non-Native people do. And that experience is very valid in terms of looking at how decisions are made, how policy affects people. We kind of have a front row view to a lot of federal policies, and having using that kind of lens really helps make policy that will be helpful for our communities. I mean, Native and non-Native, it's always great for a tribal government to have somebody in office in another government that, a peer government that understands how they operate, and understands the importance of consultation why you don't exist in a vacuum, and that tribal governments are absolutely part of that whole governmental ecosystem.
Right. And my experience, too, Arvina, in my short time working for our tribe was it was really a respectful government to government discussions that were happening. And so that's very, very important.
Absolutely. I mean, you get so many elected officials that, refer to tribes as a special interest, and that is not okay. That's a really kind of offensive take on our status, and not recognizing the special relationship that we do have with the government. And that's actually a training module that I teach as part of Emerge training. So I want to make sure that all of our non-Native folks that participate in our training program do have an understanding of tribal sovereignty and how to work with tribal governments, but also how to work it with grassroots Native communities.
Yeah, I was there at the DFL. I was emceeing the DFL, Wisconsin DFL primary, and you did a great class on that I got to sit in. And there was a great Native leader that's passed on. She loved your talk, and that was really meaningful to see that conversation between you two and her. I just want to throw that out there.
Yes, the late great Ada Deer told me she liked my presentation and that got it right.
Yeah.
You're listening to Milwaukee's Real News and Great Conversation. 540 WAUK.
Maggie Dawn.
At the top of the show, I'm joined by former ambassador and former White House ethics czar, Norm Eisen. We discuss why the Epstein files matter more broadly for government accountability.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays 4 till 6. The Maggie Dawn Show.
James Santel joining me. Donald Trump just flat out threatening Federal Reserve Governor Lisa Cook.
A lot of people apparently, Maggie, in high places in government engaging in mortgage fraud, including Adam Schiff and Letitia James, and now Commissioner Cook as well. The Federal Reserve is created independent of politics, preventing exactly this kind of thing from happening. This is the instability that causes economic crisis.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show. Weekday afternoons from 4 until 6. As Wisconsin as a fish fry on a Friday night, this is the Civic Media Radio Network. This is 540 WAUK Jackson, Milwaukee's Real News and Great Conversation. A Civic Media station.
CBS News Brief. An Israeli strike in Qatar targets Hamas leaders as they weigh a Gaza ceasefire proposal. President Trump saying of the strike,
"I was very unhappy about it, very unhappy about every aspect, and we got to get the hostages back. But I was very unhappy about the way that went down."
The DOJ files a federal criminal charge against the man accused of stabbing to death a Ukrainian refugee on a Charlotte train last month. U.S. Attorney Russ Ferguson.
"This person cannot be allowed on the streets. He cannot be allowed on our trains. So whether he is involuntarily committed or he is behind bars for a violent act, he should not be on the streets of Charlotte."
Former Meta employees tell a Senate subcommittee that the company ignores child safety online, which Meta calls nonsense. Former Meta researcher Jason Satizon says when data indicated underage children were subject to demands for sex acts, the company asked employees to erase it.
"It is evident that Meta consistently chooses profit over safety."
CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.